Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. We're talking to Daniel Clausen. He's the Conservation Programs Director for the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you. My pleasure.
What does the Conservation Trust do?
The Conservation Trust is a regional land trust that works to conserve open spaces, natural habitat, historic sites, watersheds in Rio Arriba, Santa Fe, and San Miguel counties.
And what types of that's a huge, almost anything could fall into that. How do you choose what kind of projects to do?
Well, our main work focuses on giving private landowners tools to enact conservation on their properties, namely conservation easements.
What's a conservation easement?
A conservation easement is a legal agreement between a landowner and a nonprofit or a government agency that restricts certain uses on the property in order to protect the conservation values on that property.
So restricts certain uses. What gets restricted and what doesn't to make it a conservation easement?
Well, if you had 40 acres, you may give up a certain amount of the development on that in order to protect it for open space or for critical habitat. And that would restrict your right to develop those acres, and that would be an easement on those development rights.
So you couldn't build houses on it. Could you use it for other money-making purposes?
Sure. As long as it was in line with the conservation purposes. So if you were doing good agriculture on the property, you could maintain your farm or ranch on the property as long as you were maintaining the conservation values that the easement was protecting.
So what are the problems that this type of work is designed to address?
The problems are mainly uncontrolled sprawl. We want to protect our view sheds, protect the places we love. We want to protect some access to our open spaces as a community. However, easements are not by definition, don't include public access.
What do you mean?
An easement is a voluntary measure that a landowner enacts, and they can choose whether they still want to allow the public on the property or not. But mainly it's benefiting the public just by maintaining the open space or habitat that's on the property.
What are some of the projects that the Santa Fe Conservation Trust has done that have really made a difference that you've seen so far? I mean, you're new in town, so maybe I shouldn't be asking this.
No, that's fine. The Santa Fe Conservation Trust, over the past 15 years, has already protected 30,000 acres of properties, and those are little streamside meadows. They are large ranches. Dale Ball, our founding director, created the trail system that has been named in his honor around Santa Fe. And Stuart Udall, our director emeritus, he helped initiate the Santa Fe Rails Trails project, and we were part of that, initiating that project for Santa Fe.
So there is something about Santa Fe which people are drawn to, call it sense of place or the magic of the land or whatever. Mm-hmm. Santa Fe is as much in danger of being ruined in that respect as any other place.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we're joined by a large membership and by most people in our community in the belief that by protecting this foundation of healthy land and healthy water, what we're protecting is a healthy community. And that's kind of our basic premise, is that's a foundation for a healthy economy, healthy culture, healthy individuals, is this open space and the natural lands that surround us that we all love and are drawn to here.
And that's something that, I mean, in this particular moment in time that we're living in, where children are staying inside, it's easy to lose that. And if you don't grow up with that, then there's trouble.
Right. I mean, it's something that we all grew up with, was being able to be allowed to be set free outside and let our imaginations run and to learn what our own personal boundaries are by interacting with nature and with ourselves and with our friends on the land. But increasingly, that's something that is not available to our children. And so a lot of what I like to see our work isn't for us. It's for our children and a few generations down the line, because we're rapidly developing. What it comes down to is, how do we want to develop? Do we want a really beautiful community where our children have parks right nearby where they're growing up, where we can walk to work, where we can meet our neighbors and play, where local agriculture can happen to feed and nourish our bodies and our community? These are questions we have to answer in the next 5 to 10 years, because there's a very limited amount of land and arable land that's being developed. So right now is a critical time for us to create the sort of place we want to live for generations to come.
Well, one of the things that I find just unbelievable is that in a world where, like it or not, the population is growing, people are not on an international level doing family planning to the point where the population of the Earth is stabilized, we continue to develop, not only here but all over the place, precisely on agricultural land, on the most fertile land in the world. That's the land that gets buildings and apartments and houses.
Right, that makes sense. It's flat land. It's beautiful. There's water nearby. In a place where we live in New Mexico, that land is so finite. It's our bottom land. It's the bosque. It's incredibly important. Where we have to start our conservation is with our water. Conservation of our water means that bottom land that is arable, where we can produce our crops. It's also the most critically important habitat for all the animals and plant species in New Mexico. So that's really where we like to concentrate our efforts.
So how do you go about doing the work? I mean, how do you find people with private land who might be interested in doing conservation easement?
Most landowners have either been there for generations or have recently moved to the land in New Mexico, and they've done so because they love it. They love it with all their heart and soul, their pieces of land, and they want to see the best for their properties. What we do is give them some tools that they might not be aware of, where they can protect their land and receive either tax deductions or tax credits, state tax credits, and actually get paid to protect their land.
Now, hang on. How does that work? What are the rules and what's going on there?
Well, there's federal tax deductions. So if you put an easement on your property and give up some of the development potential, that lowers the value of the property. That creates a credit. That creates a value that you just gave up, and you can donate that value. That's just like a donated gift, and that can be deducted from your taxes substantially for up to 15 years. And if you're a farmer or rancher, you can deduct that 100% from your federal taxes. What's new for New Mexico is there's a conservation tax credit that is transferable. Basically, what that means is, if you are land rich and cash poor and you don't need to, you're not going to benefit from receiving a deduction, you can sell that value that you gave up on your property and get paid to that. You can sell that to an individual who needs a tax deduction.
Huh. So do people know about this?
No, it's new. It just came online in January of 2008. So it's an amazing, amazing tool for us to use. It's an amazing tool for landowners to look into, so that they can know that they have a lot of options.
Now, if somebody is a rancher, can they, if they start getting into conservation easements or a farmer, can they still use their land the way they were using it before?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The IRS considers agricultural conservation to be just as important as open space or conservation for natural habitats. So in every way, shape, and form, they can continue to use it as long as it continues to preferably enhance the conservation values and the piece of land. And that's in a farmer and rancher's incentive to continue to improve their property. So
let's talk about the trails projects. The Dale Ball Trails, people know about, and I certainly have gone there with with and without small dogs, and they're very successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trails for our urban community is the number one way to access these natural lands and to be able to connect and get that sense of peace you get when you're out in nature. What I'd like to see is for us to continue to expand the trail system in and around Santa Fe and make it more accessible for pedestrians from the inner parts of Santa Fe to get to it, whether that's be a bike or trails that connect the nature to our urban centers.
What would that look like?
That might look like enhancing a more pedestrian-friendly city, having bike lanes that connect our surrounding wildlands to our inner city. It might also look like just increasing the sort of natural parks that are in our city to the outside.
We're talking to Daniel Clausen, who is with the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. One of the things that I'm not sure to what extent this plays into the work that you're doing with the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, but there is a sense of, you know, how do people meet in a public and civic space that is not commercial, that is not the mall? When you go hiking, you're pretty much going hiking with your friends. Are there gathering places that where, you know, in the land, on the land, that, that people come together?
Well, I think one of the central places that people come together is farmers markets, actually. It's a place where our local agriculture and our rural population comes into our urban population, and they interact and mingle. It's a, as anyone who, as everyone knows who goes to a farmer's market, it's an incredibly happy place, and you can't, you know, go 10 minutes without seeing, you know, 10 people who you know, and interacting with them. And it's,
you can't even, if you're grumpy and you go, it's really bad because everybody is just so cheerful. It's kind of, it's almost terrifying.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason why it's so cheerful is it's one of the few places where we really connect with why we chose to live in this place. It's a place where it's very visible, where it's where the incredible productivity that is available where we live is right out on display on all these tables. You have carrots and squashes and tomatoes galore. It's just an incredible fruitful experience where, yeah, there's no reason not to be happy, you know.
How did you get into this work?
I got into this work in a funny environment. Rather than being out in nature, I was in the middle of Manhattan, and I was working on a project that was a documentary film project raising awareness about the community gardens in Manhattan and how they were being sold to development. It's there that I witnessed firsthand what these community gardens mean to the people who live in these neighborhoods. It's a safe place for them to interact with their neighbors. It's a place where they could be outside. It improved the air quality. Neighborhoods with these community gardens had a 25% drop in asthma for the children in those neighborhoods.
Really?
And it was a place where I witnessed the value of land in probably the most landless place in the United States.
Well, I mean, where were they gardening?
They were gardening on little postage stamp, you know, eighth of an acre pieces of property. Basically, they were burned out buildings in the 70s that they went in with their own money and cleaned out and cleared out and planted and reclaimed into these beautifully vibrant centers for their neighborhoods.
And in addition to everything else, it's not exactly free, but it's food. It's low-cost food that you garden yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing what can be produced on the smallest piece of land. Many of these community gardens also functioned as sort of food banks for the local community during the summer. They would give away literally tens of thousands of pounds of fruits and vegetables.
Weren't those community gardens the ones that former Mayor Rudy Giuliani tried to get rid of?
Yeah, it was under Giuliani's tenure. There's over 800 community gardens, of which the city had invested nothing. The community had paid for it totally themselves, and Giuliani decided to that it'd be in the benefit of New York City to turn them over from Parks Department over to developable space. And that would generate more income for the city, and that they weren't valuable as open space for these communities, many of which lied in outlying neighborhoods that didn't have access to Central Park or these other parks in the city.
And so, what happened?
there was major outrage among most New Yorkers. And
I vaguely remember that, seeing it from a distance, but it did make the news.
Yeah, it did. And there were grandmas who would chain themselves to fences when the bulldozers pulled up to take away their community gardens. These are the only places that made these communities worth living. And eventually, actually, Bette Midler stepped in and purchased over 400 of the community gardens. The Trust for Public Land, which also has an office here in New Mexico and does similar work to us, stepped in to also purchase some of the gardens.
So the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, do they actually have money that they can spend to buy pieces of land as well as encouraging people to do conservation easements?
Yeah, I mean, what we can do is we provide the capacity to go out and find the money, whether those are private foundation dollars, whether those are state dollars or federal dollars, to go out and purchase actual pieces of land or to build out trail systems or to reclaim a rail system into a trail system, or to purchase conservation easements aside from the credit system that are highly valuable and where the landowners need to realize some income from the sale of their donation.
I would imagine that in New Mexico, we do have quite a bit of the cash poor, land rich situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the older landowners are exactly in that situation. There's also the situation where they would like to give it to their children, but they're going to see huge taxes when that is passed on to their children at their death. And so a conservation easement actually lowers the value and lowers the tax burden in passing it on to their children. So it's a great tool if looking to pass your land on to your children.
I think one of the things that is important to talk about, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, is that there's a lot of people who want to have open space and so on, but they're not necessarily talking to each other, or they don't know how to have an outlet for that wish and for that desire. How do you see bringing people together and sort of including the community in your efforts?
Right. I think this is one of the most important aspects of the work we do, is that we're starting to expand now to a point where there's a time now where everyone can get involved. There are projects that we need a lot of community help on, whether that's monitoring our easements, getting out there on the land with the landowners and taking a look at the property and seeing what's possible. If that's looking at possible restoration projects where you have a stream or a piece of land that needs some more love to bring it back up to its optimal health, we'd love to get people involved with that, whether that's building out the trail system and doing trail maintenance. You know, another great opportunity for us as a community and as a nonprofit is, how can we get our children out on the land? What are opportunities to take our school groups out on these properties, to take them to a local farm and see how their food is raised, or even to potentially make a small little food plot in a corner of a playground and volunteer your time to show these children that they can raise their own food and then take that to the kitchen and cook it and improve the health of the food they're eating at lunch.
That's such a different culture than the culture of video games and you know, mall shopping.
It is. And what's amazing when you see a child out on a garden or a farm is that they come alive. All their senses come alive, and they can touch things and they can eat things right off the bush. And it's such a different experience than they've experienced in the mall, where everything is off limits and don't touch this and don't touch that. It's, yes, touch that. Go explore that. Go play in the creek. Go plant that. There's a real dawning that goes on with children then, when they realize where their food comes from and where they come from. It's amazing. We're currently living in a culture that produces more malls than high schools, more shopping malls than high schools, more prisoners than farmers. Farmer is not an occupation on the census list anymore.
Oh,
they've
my
taken
goodness.
It off. Less,
oh.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And so much of that was all about the policy that happened in the 80s under Ronald Reagan.
Right. Yeah, it was policy of that. It was from Reagan's policies, but it stretches back to an idea that a big industrialized agriculture system is the best way to go. We're learning that actually what might be the safest way is to have rural agriculture that is local and small, where people care for the land, intimately know it, and then our food systems are safe. We're not importing food from 2,000 miles away or from China. We know where it's grown. It's grown locally. It's grown close. It's grown in a healthy manner, and we're connected to it. That might actually be the ideal food system and not something that was launched in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, when everybody's motto was, well, not everybody's, but, you know, better living through chemistry and the whole idea that we are going to be saved by the industrial system.
Right, exactly. And it's an economic perspective where you try to make everything as efficient as possible. And that's fine, but it doesn't speak to the quality of life and to the choices we need to make as community and as a state that that are going to benefit us in the long run.
Well, and especially things like topsoil loss and soil depletion.
Right. I mean, there's a whole suite of problems out there right now, whether it's climate change, soil depletion, whether it's the pollution of our water sources as well. There's a lot of major problems. The solutions lie in real basic steps that we take locally.
We're talking to Daniel Clausen of the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. So how are you encouraging people to get involved? Let's say non-landowners or people whose the land they own is an eighth of an acre or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How can they get involved in this work that the Santa Fe Conservation Trust is doing?
Well, I think I would encourage them to call me up or call us up and find out what their interests are. If their interest is in working with children, we can certainly plug them into local groups who are getting children out on the land. If their interest is in learning native plants and restoring those to our regional landscape, then, you know, we certainly have many projects that we can dial them into. There's a whole suite of opportunities for them to
restoration work is very interesting because even if a piece of land isn't developed, it can be really damaged if the balance of nature has gone. I mean, what do you have to do when you have, for example, a stream that has been really badly damaged by human contact?
There's some amazing work being done out there that was pioneered by Bill Zeidig. And what you have to do ultimately is work with the land. I think we've had a perspective of restoration where we come in and where a stream's been highly incised and eroded, we may come in and fill it with a bunch of rock and soil and try to lift it back up. And then a flood event happens and it washes it right back out again. Or we may put in dams and realize that those dams just get washed out again. However, there's a way where we can work with those flood events and with nature's amazing power that's happening all the time to help more sediment be deposited with the land. And the same go for grasslands that have been highly degraded. There's a way where we can ranch that brings back the vitality and increases the productivity of those grasslands. That benefits the rancher economically, and it benefits the grasslands. Something I like to say is that biodiversity and bioproductivity and a financially viable ranch all go hand in hand. So
are you working with ranchers? I mean, there is historically. I think it's changed, but there has been historically some very strong differences of opinion between environmentalists and some ranchers.
Right. And, you know, coming out of the 70s, there was a very antagonistic view most environmentalists held out of against people who worked on the land, whether that was loggers or ranchers. What we're realizing now is that we're all being educated by the land. We're all learning from the land one step at a time. And that we all have an interest in being the best stewards we can of the land. It's going to benefit our children, benefit us personally in a healthy way. And it's a really amazing time right now in the environmental movement or just in the land movement in general where it's not divisive. We're not working against each other. You're seeing ranchers and ecologists come together because they realize that together they can find the solutions that are going to benefit everyone. I'm highly optimistic and hopeful for our future. on this planet and in our community and in our regional landscape, that there are the solutions available if we listen to the land and choose to work together instead of work together, instead of working apart.
Daniel Clausen, thank you so much for coming and speaking to us here at the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And Daniel Clausen is with the Santa Fe Conservation Trust. What are the website and phone number over there?
The website is sfct.org. Again, that's www.sfct.org. And the phone number at the Santa Fe Conservation Trust is 505-989-7019.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. We're going to take a little break now. We'll be right back. I would like to welcome Carl Moffitt. He's a freelance writer. He writes stories for the Santa Fe New Mexicans outdoor section, and he has a blog called OutdoorsNewMexico.com.
Morning, Mary Charlotte.
Nice to have you. So you are interested in not so much the galleries and the restaurants, but the wonders of New Mexico that the land gives us.
Yes, I am, and I would hope more people were.
Is that true, that not a lot of people are? I thought that the trails were packed to the gills with happy little campers.
Well, it's astounding. The further out you get from, like a city like Santa Fe, you run into fewer and fewer people. I think a lot of people come here to Santa Fe for, you know, the attractions that are right here, you know, the galleries, the restaurants, the skiing, the opera, so on and so forth. But, I mean, there's so much more to be seen in New Mexico, and I think that what really makes New Mexico so special really is out there.
How did you get into the exploration of New Mexican outdoors? You're from the Boston area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents moved here to retire in Las Cruces. We all kind of filtered down here over the years to see what it was all about. And, I think that the thing that really amazed me about New Mexico was just how big it was. And being from the East Coast, where you're kind of hemmed in, you got to go to the ocean to see anywhere, I think it just blew me away. And I was just never really able to go back. And I made New Mexico my home. And I've just been bumming around New Mexico now for over 20 years or more. And I continuously find new and wonderful places here to fall in love with, and I'd like to share that with others.
So let's say you have a visitor to New Mexico from the East Coast, the West Coast, or anywhere, and they say, I want to go on an adventure, which is not just going up to the trails around the ski area, but I want to get in my car and go somewhere interesting. Where would you go? I mean, one of the places that you've talked about is not too far away, is Cerrillos.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Cerrillos, wonderful little town, and there's a reason they make so many movies out that way, is because it really captures a lot of the Old West flair that you find out here, and it's just right down the road. Just drive on down the road to the back road to Cerrillos, and you'll find an old railroad siding down there with cottonwood trees and old coke furnaces, and you can really kind of get lost, thinking about, wow, what did they do here years ago? And then there's, of course, the little town of Cerrillos is down the road, and the county just built the park system out there, the trails that go through the Cerrillos Hills. Of course, there used to be a lot of turquoise mining and other kinds of mining out there. And that trail network runs in a loop up through the hills, and you can look at some of the old mines and really see quite a bit. You see the mountains back there. It's just a beautiful place to get away. It's not very crowded. It's on an old dirt back road. And then when you are through doing all that, exploring, here's this funky little town of Cerrillos, and Little Mary's Bar there, with this this woman who's well into her 90s, I think, who still runs the place. I hope she's still there. She was the last time I pulled in, and the petting zoo down the street that's run by the Browns, and it's just a great little town, a great little getaway right here close to Santa Fe.
When you say that you can see the mines, were they just sort of left a big mess and it's still there, or what does it look like?
Well, they've enclosed most of the mines now so that you can't fall down in them, but you can see the hole in the ground. and they'll have a little interpretive sign there, and you can see the surrounding hills and imagine where other mines must have been out there. I think there's 4 or 5 mines on that trail there that you park by the side of the road and hike up into the hill.
So another trip that I have to say is in all the guidebooks that a lot of people do is going up to Chimayo.
Sure, sure. And, you know, a lot of people just jump on the highway and run up to Española and go up 76. They hit the Santa Wario and turn around and go back the same way they came. Well, there's another way to get to Chimayo that traditionally is taken by the pilgrims that go up there on Good Friday. And it goes through the back road through Nambe. And here's this beautiful country up there, you know, these wonderful haciendas lining the road and cottonwood trees and arroyos and these rolling hills and the badlands. It's just astounding scenery, and it's on the back road to Chimayo. And that's up 503, and it loops around. And there's plenty of public land up there, so people who want to explore, get out of their car. You can go up there and find one of the unlocked gates and just pull on up in there, park your car, and you can hike around half the day.
Now, what's the story with public land? I mean, we know that public land is, in theory, maintained by the dollars that come out of our hard-earned paychecks. But at the same time, is it all accessible? I mean, some of it is, some of it isn't.
Well, you know, this is mostly BLM land up there. And of course,
so you can just go on to BLM land.
Right. And they manage, the BLM manages most of their land for some form of multiple use. You know, the Forest Service and the BLM, they all have a use concept that it's managed for whether it's the extraction of minerals. So up there, you have some ranchers that had leases on these lands and they ran cattle. And so there's little ranch roads that run all through the hills up there, and it's public property. Now, the rancher may have a – believes that he owns the place and may act that way sometimes, but
– Has that happened to you?
No, not really. You'll usually find a locked gate on public lands where there shouldn't be. And if you complain, you know, you can get that gate unlocked, and a lot of times the ranchers will complain about vandalism and so on and so forth. But, you know, typically speaking, if there's an unlocked gate, you know, it's probably accessible. And if you're just up there hiking around, I don't think you're going to have any problem at all with anybody. And you can generally just look at, you know, the tracks in the road and determine what, you know, if you're seeing bicycle tracks up on one of these little side roads through a gate, you know, some mountain bikers have found that place too. And, you know, go on, get down, get out, and enjoy. There's lots of land out there and lots to be seen.
Now, is bicycling part of what you do, mountain biking?
Well, you know, I grew up in the city of Malden, Mass, and I spent a lot of years on a bike. So now I prefer my little Japanese Jeep now. But, you know, yeah, I have a mountain bike at home, and I still ride it. And I just don't get out as much on that as I do in other ways.
We're talking to Carl Moffat. So Chimayo has not only the Santuario, but also it's quite a picturesque village.
Well, Chimayo, you know, you can go this back road to Chimayo through Nambe. But, you know, I like the area up around Cundio, which is the little village that's beyond Chimayo. And you continue up the hill and you go past the old overlook to Santa Cruz Lake. And I think you can still park there and walk up and look out over the whole valley and look at the lake below. But Cundio is this tiny little old Spanish settlement up in the mountains. And the Los Frijoles Creek runs through it and cuts through the rocks down to Santa Cruz Lake. There's some wonderful buildings up there. Dave Roybal, the noted columnist from the New Mexican and the Journal, he lives up there and writes frequently about that area. And there's some wonderful buildings. And at the end of that road is the you can drive down to Santa Cruz Lake, or you can go up to Borrego Mesa, which is, of course, up in the Pecos, the backside of the Pecos. Lots of country, lots of opportunities to have a good time and get out there. And then at the end of that road, you can drive down this little hill with these steep, twisty turns, and it comes down into this little village of Cundio at the bottom of the hill. And then you can jump on State Road 76. You can go back to Chimayo and Española. But it's a nice little getaway.
Now, do you end up it sounds like you end up hanging out and talking to people when you go to these places.
Sure. I mean, I worked for the paper up north at the Rio Grande Sun for many years. And that's how I really fell in love with northern New Mexico. And I did a lot of fishing up there. And, you know, people were very nice to me. You know, northern New Mexico sometimes gets a bad rap, you know, because of the problems they have up there. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of very nice people that live up there, a lot of helpful folks who are more than willing to share, you know, what they have up there with other folks. They take a lot of pride in their lifestyle up there.
So another trip is to the Indian ruins near White Rock at Sankawi.
Mm-hmm. That's a great little trip if you just want to take a quick drive and go check out some Indian ruins. Maybe you've never, you know, done that before. And it's a little piece of Bandelier up there off of State Road 4. And it's on your way to Right Rock. And you gotta look out for it because it's, they don't have a big flashy sign or anything. It's just a kind of wide spot by the side of the road. And, if you hit the stoplight at East Jemez Road, you've gone too far. It's a little further back. So right there, you park your car and climb up onto this mesa top. And they have all these great little caves up there with still got the smoke on the ceilings. And you can crawl around in these things. They got ladders. You can crawl up on top of the mesa top. And it's really interesting. And it'll put you back there. You can imagine what it must have been like, especially this time of year, where it's wintertime, and they built these in facing the southern exposure to catch all that, you know, that nice warm weather. And you can sit out there and just imagine. You can look down into the little valley down below and imagine how, you know, there must have been at that time a, you know, good water source running through here, and they planted some crops and, you know, hiked down into the fields and went hunting. It can really take you back.
Now, I imagine there aren't as many people there as there are at the main part of Bandelier.
No, there isn't. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, it's one of those little locals only kind of places where, you know, you can really get the place to yourself. And, you know, I'm not dissing Bandelier. This is a part of Bandelier, but, you know, it's not as well advertised as the other places.
When I first moved here, I think it was about 16 or 17 years ago, I went to the Puye Cliff Dwellings. But then there was a fire there, and mm-hmm. It closed. Can one still go to that place?
You know, last time I talked to those folks up at Santa Clara, was I inquired about whether the ponds were still open. They had two or three ponds up there that were feeding off a creek that were really good fishing. And that's up that same road. And they told me then, no, they were still rehabbing that area. And I remember they had closed that because of the Cerro Grande fire. And, you know, I covered that when I was working at the paper up there. And it hasn't been open since. And I don't think it is. I double check on that, but I don't think it's open anymore.
So, of course, Ghost Ranch is on the list of things to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you got to take a – if you're going to come out here and see the sights, of course, Georgia O'Keeffe is big with the museum here in town. But if you want to see where she really got her inspiration, you know, you need to head up to the Ghost Ranch, check out the Echo Amphitheater, stop at the Piedra Lumbre Visitor Center.
What's the Echo Amphitheater? I remember when I very first visited New Mexico, long before I moved here, it was quite amazing.
Yes, it's just a natural concave shape. It's cut out of the wall of this cliff face that serves as like a almost like a parabolic mic in some way. You know what I mean? If you stand at the bottom of it and you hoot and holler up at it, it bounces right off those walls and you get this great, you know, effect. And it's just pretty in there, and it sounds really cool. And it's the photography. If you want to take home a picture of New Mexico to show people how big it is and how stunning the views are and how colorful it is, you can't find better opportunities than up near the Ghost Ranch. Whether it's on Ghost Ranch itself, they allow people to go hiking in there, or whether it's in the surrounding area as you drop down into that canyon where the rest area is off the highway, just by the Abiquiu Lake. I mean, those red rocks off to your right, I mean, if you just sat there for a day with your camera and shot this thing, it's a lot like the Grand Canyon. The color, the different times of the day, and at the end of the evening when the sun sets to the west and you get that color on those rocks, just astounding opportunities for great photography out there.
We're talking to Carl Moffett. Now, these are all, you know, having promised our listeners that we're going to take them far afield, these are still places pretty close to home if you live in Santa Fe or are visiting here. But you also go to further more distant parts of New Mexico, eastern New Mexico, and of course, you know, the southern area too.
If you were to say, I've got four places that I think are really great to go if you want to get out of town for a day, maybe spend a night somewhere and do something out on the eastern plains, if you really want to capture the flavor of that. You know, it's a really big country. I mean, eyes wide open for a long ways. And Mills Canyon out by between Roy and Abbott is just a wonderful little getaway. It's very remote. It's down in this canyon where an old homestead used to be. There's an amazing amount of history. There are old ruins still down in there. It's very cool, and it is very out there. And, I mean, you want to take a drive out of Santa Fe and get away from the rush of life. You know, this is a great place to just kind of lose yourself for an afternoon. And I guarantee you, you know, you spend a day out there, you're going to come back with a clear head. And it's a great drive.
Now, that's
That's out to the east.
That's out to the east. Okay, let's do the compass points. What about going west?
If I was heading west, I'd send somebody out towards Dattle. Out towards Dattle is old country, old cattle country out there. The plains of San Augustine, Augustine, I guess it's called. That was the old days. Billy the Kid used to ride between Lincoln and Reserve through this place, and it's just miles and miles and miles. Well, that's where they put the very large array, the big telescopes that New Mexico is known for. That U2 did their video down there, and Foster did her movie there.
Yeah, Contact.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster.
Yep. And that's that country. And it's huge. It's just amazingly big country. And they're in Pie Town. You know, if you're going to go to Dattle, you definitely have to stop at the Eagle. I think it's the Eagle Guest Ranch down there. But they have a great little bar, you know. And, of course, it's got huge you know, elk heads hanging from the wall, and it's all, you know, rustic and log, but they make a great chili cheeseburger. You can catch a cold beer. It's a great place just to drive out to have a cheeseburger and a beer. You can go down the road even further to Pie Town, which is where they shot a documentary during the early 40s by what was then the Farm Service. And they were documenting the Dust Bowl, the depression conditions in that town. And you can go online and check that out and some amazing pictures. That town's still there. They're still making pies. It's a great place to take a drive, and it is out in the middle of nowhere.
Now, just for the information of our viewers, Dattil is D-A-T-I-L.
That's right.
Okay, so we've done east and west. North.
And you go through Magdalena, I might add, to get to Dattil.
Okay.
That's a fun little town. And if I was heading north, my favorite place in New Mexico to send folks, if you want to head north, up towards the Colorado border is of course, the Valle Vidal. And, you know, it's been compared to as the Yellowstone of New Mexico. And the Valle Vidal is a great place to visit and camp and fish, but I like driving through it to Cimarron on the other side. And the road that runs through there might be 20, 30 miles, a good secondary gravel road. I mean, you're not going to lose it up there, but it's a dirt road. It runs through some amazing country. And
do you have to have the right vehicle
to
do that?
No, yeah. I've done this in two-wheel drive, you know, beaten up Toyota Corollas. A lot of people think that just because it's a dirt road that, you know, they have to have an SUV. You know, I've been driving around New Mexico for a long time in a variety of vehicles, and there are very few roads that I wouldn't drive in a rental car. You know what I'm saying? They're fine roads. They're just made of gravel instead of paved over. But that road runs through a canyon that comes out on the other side out in Cimarron. And Cimarron's an old cowboy town, and they host one of the probably one of the best rodeos in this state that you can see. And that's a good summer vacation to drive up through there, up to the Valle Vidal, come out on the other side of Cimarron, maybe go to the rodeo. Spend a night and have some dinner at the St. James Hotel out in Cimarron, where, you know, it's supposed to be haunted, and it's pretty cool.
Is it haunted?
Yeah, it's haunted, man. Yeah, they've got a video and everything. They had some of them haunted house people come down and document it.
Oh, well, if it's on a video, it must be true.
That's right. They got the photos.
We're talking to Carl Moffat. So when you go on all these excursions, what do you have to make sure to bring with you?
Well, you know, I think that, some of the recent news illustrates how important having a cell phone is. You know, you don't get cell phone coverage everywhere, but, you know, having a cell phone with you and a map, I think, is the way to go. And, you know, the map's probably, to me, the most important thing, because that's what gets you there and that's what gets you out of there if you have a problem. And that's what you need to explore. And a map and a cell phone comes in handy. Of course, the usual stuff, you know, in your car, some
food.
Water. Yeah, you always have some water, a spare tire, you know, things of that nature. But let's not overlook southern New Mexico.
Yes, because you started out your New Mexico adventure in Las Cruces.
Mm-hmm. And Las Cruces is, holds a very, you know, I'm very fond of Las Cruces. And it's, you know, it's nice and warm down there in the winter. And this is a wonderful time of year to head south, man, because it does get warm in Cruces and it's a beautiful place to visit. But if you're going to go down the back way. Don't go down I-25 and burn it up in 3.5 hours. And you know, it's a fine view. But if you go down the back way through Corona or Vaughan or go down through the old towns of Chillery and Torreon and come out at Carrizozo, I mean, there's some amazing stuff down there. The churches at the Salinas Missions are down there. And the Grand Quivira, the salt mines, and not the salt mines. Well, back in the days when these guys came out here for salt, they had established these missions out there. And there's these rock fortresses out in the middle of nowhere that are fairly interesting. And it's a good little trip. And Carrizozo is a great town. You know, they've got a wonderful little saloon in Carrizozo where, once again, the green chili cheeseburger can't be beat. And you can climb up over the mountain into Ruidoso, spend a night up there, or just keep driving through Alamogordo, across White Sands, the desert, and pop into Las Cruces. And that back road is remote, it's rural, it's out there, and there's a little town, I think it's called Clounch. And
that's a great name.
Yeah, and it's between Carrizozo and further north, Mountain Air, I guess. And I was driving down that road one time, and they have a little museum out there, and they had just one or two houses out there, and it looks very old homestead. And I was driving by, and I come across a funeral. And here are these people at a funeral, and it's out on the windswept kind of plains, you know. And there are folks standing out there in their Sunday finest, and they get the backhoe, you know, they're putting the casket in the ground. And I'll tell you, driving through that town, you wouldn't have known that anybody lived out there. But here these folks were, you know, getting together and for a funeral. And it was visually, it was very stunning. I mean, I wanted to take a photo because I think it really said a lot. You know, I mean, you know, these folks were all out there in their suits and their ties. And it was very, very, you know, there's not a lot out there. You know, it's just out on this windswept plain. You know what I mean? And it was just them out there in the cemetery. But that's the kind of stuff you run across hitting the back roads of New Mexico. And that's what it's all about. If you're going to live here and visit here, you should get out on the back roads.
Carl Moffitt is a freelance journalist. He writes for the outdoor section of the Santa Fe New Mexican, and his blog is called OutdoorsNewMexico.com. Everything we've talked about, you can read about on OutdoorsNewMexico.com. It's wonderful to have you here. Much more to talk about. Hope to do it another time soon.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.